my server, serving me. Your computer will print. Should you call the president? What in the world are you gonna do? Call Adam, the computer guy. Call Adam. Don't know the reason why. Do you find it a waste of time? Because you cannot get online. Call Adam, the computer guy. Or go online to AdamTheComputerGuy.com.
And thanks again, Mr. Paul Savage, the performer and composer. Well, I helped compose it a little bit, but he's the main composer of that tune, the Adam, the Computer Guy theme song. Hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as I enjoyed working on it. Always nice when they sing your praises. Be sure to listen to Paul and his lovely wife, Glenna, every Sunday afternoon for Heaven Express. Great show every Sunday afternoon here on The Talking Place, WWGH. Go to our website, WWGH1071.com, for more information on that show, my shows, Scott Spears, Charlie Evers, and just about everybody else here at the station, The Talking Place. This is called the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, where we talk today's top technology topics. Take your telephone calls, emails, Facebook messages, and other methods of communication. And I very much enjoy presenting this information to you. We'll be talking about the Equifax data breach, information about over 140 million people in the United States stolen from the credit reporting company Equifax, and what they plan on doing to rectify the situation. That's probably the number one tech story this week. We'll be covering that shortly, as well as some new and exciting smartphones and other stuff that you can spend your Christmas and holiday money on. Coming up after this show, I'm on again with Mid-Morning Coffee Break. Be speaking with our resident political expert and commentator, Dr. Ronald Fineman. He has made it through Hurricane Irma with excellent preparation on his end. Be discussing that. Memories of 9/11, which happened exactly 16 years and one day ago. Discussing about how I was personally witnessing an earthquake in northern New York, which I think was the most extreme weather or climatological event that I've ever witnessed personally in my lifetime. And that was October 7th of 83, a while back. But I remember waking up about 6:30 in the morning and my bed was shaking. And I knew that we had earthquakes in northern New York, where I was living at the time going to college, but never actually had been through one. But after that time, I could say that I did witness an earthquake. So we're discussing that. You really don't know much about these major climatological events unless you have been in one or had some kind of personal connection. So by no means am I downplaying the severity of the hurricanes, but that I feel is the most significant weather or climatological event that I've witnessed. And we're discussing that. The hurricane did very minor damage to Ron's house there in Boca Raton. We'll be discussing that and the preparations that he took and how to be smart when Mother Nature throws us a curveball. Then coming up after noon, sometimes I guest host the show, but this week Scott Spears is back, or at least back temporarily as the host of Now, again starting shortly after noon here on The Talking Place. So lots of great shows, locally hosted, produced, and voiced right here at 5590 Center Street on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio, for you all day today. Thank you for listening. Samsung recently unveiled its Galaxy Note 8 smartphone, which probably should be called the supersize phone. It is considered to be one of the largest Android headsets currently available. Again, in that term we use called phablet, kind of a cross between a tablet and a phone. It's really too big to be called just a phone. So certainly having large hands would be helpful. It has an improved S Pen, which will allow users to communicate in what Samsung described as more, quote, personal ways. It has what they call the Infinity Display. It features bezel-less full frontal glass and edge-to-edge screen. Cool stuff. And how many thousands of dollars is it going to cost? Now, check this out. This new supersized smartphone, the Galaxy Note 8, that Samsung is debuting, has 6 gigabytes of RAM. That's absolutely amazing. I remember my computer didn't even have 6 megabytes of RAM, 6 gigabytes of RAM. An octa-core 2.36 gigahertz quad processor plus a 1.7 gigahertz quad 10 nanometer processor, 65 gigabytes of storage, and expandable memory. Now, it has a 6.3-inch quad HD plus screen. So this is it's a tablet-sized phone. You can call it a phablet, but it's a phone, Samsung Note 8. Over half a foot is the size of the screen. The S Pen, which this new Note 8 comes with, lets users send handwritten notes and even create animated GIF files from videos. So you can have a new wrinkle on scribbling a note to your crush in school or at work, for example, to scribble it with the pen. Pretty cool, huh? Samsung has said this functionality is a true step up from traditional text messaging. Make an animated GIF file from videos and send a handwritten note. This S Pen that this Note 8 comes with is more than a stylus. It has a 0.7 millimeter tip that is far more precise than the styluses that were used with Palm and other devices 10 years ago. We've come quite a long time since then. It also is truly connected to the device. Over 4,000 levels of pressure, and this can respond to the touch of the pen tip more accurately. It also has eraser functionality. And it's the S Pen, a super stylus that comes with the new 6.5-inch Note 8 Samsung smartphone. Another improvement that Samsung is talking about is the always-on display. It lets users receive and read notifications without unlocking the device. Pre-ordering for the Galaxy Note 8 begins shortly. It'll be available from the major carriers. The unlocked handset costs much more than I can afford, $929. So almost $1,000 for this Note 8, but it's got a lot of features. So if you make more money than I do, I'd say go for it. Among the feature highlights on this Note 8 are rear cameras. Two rear cameras. It's the first handset to have two 12-megapixel rear cameras with optical image stabilization. These cameras offer wide-angle and telephoto lenses, which give the user greater control of the depth of field. Users can adjust the effect in preview mode as well as after a photo is taken. So again, two 12-megapixel cameras on this phone. Unfathomable what they can fit in a little device nowadays. But again, it's almost $1,000, so there's always a catch. The wide-angle lens has a dual pixel sensor, goodness sakes, with rapid autofocus functionality capturing sharp images in low-light conditions. The camera further offers a dual capture mode. Both cameras are utilized to take two photos simultaneously, one a close-up using this telephoto lens and the other a wide-angle shot of the same subject. In addition to the dual rear cameras, of course, there's a front-facing camera, an 8-megapixel smart autofocus front-facing camera, which you can use for video chats, as well as, of course, a good old selfie. Three cameras in the phone. How about that? The Samsung Galaxy Note 8. Again, list price unlocked of 929 smackaroonies. It's clearly meant to be a premium smartphone. Yes, and again, above the price range of people that work in the radio business. But it's not exactly Samsung's newest flagship product. Ramon Llamas, research manager for wearables and mobile phones at IDC, said, with Samsung, we first look at the hardware. The display is gorgeous. It feels good in the hand, and it's a great-looking device. For $929, it better be. But it's really the software that makes this device hum. And there, it isn't revolutionary. The Galaxy Note 8 is just moving it further in the same direction. Still, according to Wayne Lamb from IHS Market, he's the principal analyst for mobile electronics, said, the Note 8 appears to be the clear direction of what Samsung believes the premium smartphone design should look like. By extending their Infinity Display design language from the Galaxy S8 and S8 Plus, Samsung is evolving to maximize the screen real estate of the device while keeping the handset ergonomic enough for everyday use. The inclusion of the dual cameras are interesting and should offer improvements to telephoto videos and photo stabilization. Of course, again, with that price for the unlocked phone, $929, the issue will be whether even the dedicated, faithful Samsung customer will embrace this new Note 8, given that it's a premium device without any key revolutionary benefits or improvements. According to the experts, what it does add may be too little, even for the core audience. All these innovations come at a price, and the cost of the Note 8 will be the most expensive version of the series, more so than the ill-fated Note 7. Yet, Samsung is appealing to the hardcore Note users. This demographic values utility and performance, among other things, whereas Apple tries to appeal to all smartphone users with their Zen-like simplicity and designs. And that's from Wayne Lamb. He's an expert on this kind of thing. He works at IHS Market. The next iPhone, the 10th anniversary model, could give Samsung's Note 8 a run for its money. It's true, even though it's appealing to a different demographic. However, from a price point perspective, they are both attracting the same customers. Now, the Note 7, of course, was rather ill-fated, and the experts that we quote are not sure whether Samsung can put this Note 7 fiasco in the past and keep it there. Ramon Llamos, again from IDC, expert said, with each device that comes out, that debacle with the exploding batteries is farther in the rearview mirror. They did everything they could to restore trust, and this was a key part of the presentation that introduced the Note 8. They're reminding everything that they are a key innovator in this space. So will Samsung sell millions of units? The answer is yes, according to Ramon Llamos from IDC. They sell millions worldwide. But we should remember again that this isn't their true flagship device, just a shift to a more premium handset. So a $929 smartphone, the Note 8 from Samsung, two rear cameras and a front camera for the always interesting and important selfie. Would you spend that much money for a smartphone? Well, if you make more money than I do, sure, why not? Give me a call, send me an email, leave me a Facebook comment. Let me know what you think about this, about the new Samsung smartphone. Supersize, 6.3 inches. Adam at WWGH1071.com. It seems like every show here on the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, we talk about computer security emergencies, not a positive topic, but an important one, as if your data is not secure, if it doesn't stay in the right hands, then it greatly loses its value, to put it mildly. You've probably heard about the Equifax data breach, Equifax being a credit reporting agency. The sources have indicated that personal information of as many as 143 million U.S. consumers, that's almost half the U.S. population and certainly more than half of the adult population. This was reported in early September. Equifax said it suffered a major criminal data breach, exposing personal information of 143,000 million consumers in the United States between mid-May and July of 2017. very serious, and I certainly have credit cards and loans, and my name is floating around, and, you know, my name isn't exactly John Smith, so it isn't hard to find me. So I read about this, and let's put it mildly, was not a happy camper. And data breaches of agencies that we trust with our personal information, that's very serious. And hopefully they will get this fixed and learn how to prevent it from recurring. This data breach, this attack, this hacking, no reason to sugarcoat it. Data was stolen. Equifax was hacked. Sensitive personal data like names, addresses, social security numbers, dates of birth, and even driver's license numbers were stolen. The attackers accessed credit card data for about 209,000 consumers and credit dispute information for 182,000 consumers. So not a lot of people getting their credit disputes information stolen, but one is too many, and we're talking about a couple hundred thousand. Now, these hackers, these data intruders, these thieves, obtained a limited amount of information for some people in the United Kingdom and Canada, but Equifax did not indicate how many people that was. This attack was discovered on July 29th, and immediately Equifax began to take action. Hopefully they woke everybody up who had anything to do with their security department and told them to get busy fixing it. They contacted law enforcement agencies and hired a top independent cybersecurity firm, which has been conducting a thorough cybersecurity review in order to understand the scope of the attack and what specific information was involved. Richard Smith, the CEO of Equifax, said, "It's clearly a disappointing event for our company." I'd say it's a lot more than a disappointing event. I'd say it's a catastrophe, but that's what their CEO, Richard Smith, said. "It's an event which strikes at the heart of who we are and what we do." He apologized to consumers and business customers. He said, "We pride ourselves on being a leader in managing and protecting data, and we are conducting a thorough review of all of our security operations." And that comes from Richard Smith, CEO of Equifax, which suffered a data breach affecting possibly more than half the adult population in the United States recently. Equifax has developed a comprehensive portfolio of services to support U.S. consumers, according to their president or CEO, Richard Smith, whether or not they were impacted directly by the incident. Equifax has started a dedicated website, EquifaxSecurity2017.com, to help consumers determine whether they were impacted by the incident, and also to sign up for complimentary credit monitoring and identity theft protection. I tell you, that's not going to help. Equifax needs to fix this and be sure it doesn't recur. You think they learn from Target and Sears and places, Home Depot, places that have been hacked, that this is not a laughing matter. So again, you can see I'm not too pleased about this. But it's important to report what happens and make your own decision. Am I being too strict? Am I coming down too hard on Equifax, like I came down on Home Depot and Target a couple years ago? Well, let me know. Adam at WWGH1071.com. Anyway, this package includes something called Trusted ID Premier, which includes three bureau credit monitoring of Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian credit reports, as well as copies of credit reports from Equifax, the ability to lock and unlock Equifax reports, identity theft insurance, and the ability to scan for compromised Social Security numbers to see if they are on the internet. Something Equifax is offering to customers to give what I would call a very lame apology for this serious data breach. Also, Equifax said it will contact consumers directly by mail if their credit cards or dispute documents were compromised. They are in the process of contacting federal and state regulators as well as the attorneys general of all 50 states and territories about this incident. New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman issued a consumer alert early September. He said the Equifax breach has potentially exposed sensitive personal information of nearly everyone with a credit report, and my office intends to get to the bottom of how and why this massive hack attacked. And I applaud him for taking such a strong immediate stand. I encourage all New Yorkers to immediately call Equifax to see if their data was compromised and to consider additional measures to protect themselves. There's a dedicated call center with a toll-free number, open 7 days a week, Eastern Time, 7 a.m. to 1 a.m. Equifax's goal cannot be to, quote, fix the problem and move on, according to, again, their CEO, Richard Smith. He said that to the Equifax employees. Now, Equifax has made significant investments in cybersecurity. Company officials recognize that they must do more, and their CEO, Richard Smith, promised that they will. Adam says, seeing is believing. Again, learn from what Target and other places suffered a couple years ago. The company has responded well to the attack, and that comes from Mark Nunakovin, a VP at Trend Micro. They're in the computer security and antivirus business. He noted that CEO Richard Smith has issued a written and video statement accepting responsibility. It has called in outside technical expertise and is providing assistance to consumers. Nunakovin said Equifax's response in this situation is a great example of how to respond if a cyber criminal does manage to breach your defenses. Still, the attack appears to have exposed a vulnerability of Equifax that could challenge it from both a security and branding perspective and potentially expose it to legal jeopardy. Chris Morales from Vectra, they're in the security business, cybersecurity business, said Equifax needs to raise their cybersecurity score. Enterprises need to realize that they cannot address cybersecurity by simply spending money on intrusion prevention solutions. They need to shift investments to detection and response solutions to thwart today's advanced hackers. Some law firms already have launched investigations into potential securities law violations by Equifax, and their stock dropped 13% the day after the news, and they deserved every nickel of that. So again, not a happy camper from my end, and be sure to watch your credit report, folks. If it smells like a rat, it probably is. I know I say that a lot, but pretty much that's how it goes. It's unfortunate that the companies that are the most trusted with our information, companies who keep databases that help you determine if you can get a mortgage or a car loan or a better rate on your credit card or a credit line increase, we can't even trust them with our data. Kind of a sad state of affairs. Sina Gressen, an attorney with the FTC's Consumer and Business Education Division, said consumers should check the Equifax site to find out if their data was exposed, making sure to use a secure computer with an encrypted network connection. Also, people can check all three major credit reports using the annualcreditreport.com site and look for an account that you don't recognize. Consumers should consider placing a credit freeze on their files to make it harder for somebody to open up an account in their name. Or if they decide not to place the credit freeze, placing a fraud alert on their files. And that comes from Sina Gressen, an attorney with the FTC's Consumer and Business Education Division. Lastly, consumers can file their taxes early to avoid tax identity theft. So let me know what you think about this. Do you think you might have been a victim of this data breach at Equifax? Adam at WWGH1071.com. We'll keep updated on this story over the next few weeks. Adam Lepp here, the computer guy on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. So, are you looking for employment? Well, if you are, you more than likely, especially if you listen to this show or searching online through maybe Craigslist or job search resources using LinkedIn, which I've talked about often, is a good place to look for employers and employees. But, of course, almighty Google, they're in the job search arena also. And they've been doing some improvements, enhancements, adjustments, so to speak, of their job search system. They've recently announced a very highly anticipated launch of their job search aggregation technology. That sounds like fun. Following a recent announcement of their Google for Jobs program at their annual conference. Now, this system will let Google users search for jobs either on mobile devices or personal computers and use a set of filters to obtain very targeted results pulled from many different sites across the web. During a recent keynote presentation, Google's CEO said that the company wanted to use their machine learning capabilities to find ways to make an immediate impact on people's lives. Google has invested a lot of time, effort, and resources to enhance their machine learning for job search capabilities over the last year. According to their CEO, Sundar Pichai, he pointed to 2016's introduction of a Google Jobs application programs interface, a vertical machine learning model. Pretty fancy stuff, huh? Now, this Google Jobs application programming interface, or API, utilizes two types of technologies that are proprietary. And they're pretty much there, something that Google only can modify and offer. They deliver results that match both employers and job seekers' needs. Now, this special technology includes 30 broad categories on top, followed by 1,100 occupational families, and then, check this out, 250,000 specific occupations. I didn't know there were 250,000 specific occupations. You know, it's a radio station. What do we have here? Webmaster, show host, producer. Of course, I do all three of those things. So I guess you could be that specific. Why not, right? And it's good to know what you do for a living anyway. Anyway, 50,000 specific hard and soft skills with various relationships are included in this matrix of jobs. The Google search technology allows users to filter job searches by various criteria. For example, commuting distance or specific methods of transportation, like a bus, train, or a car. A train, sure. Well, we don't have trains in this area, but if you do, sure, why not? It can filter by seniority, benefits, employment type, or other information. Google tested this system with some of their partner firms, big companies like Johnson & Johnson, FedEx, Career Builder, and Health South. 18% of applicants at Johnson & Johnson were more likely to apply for work once this technology was added to the mix. The technology was able to search for jobs across all levels of experience and wage levels, including jobs that are particularly hard to search for, like retail and hospitality jobs. The Google Jobs system on the Johnson & Johnson careers site, according to Sierd Gehring, Global VP of Talent Acquisition at Johnson & Johnson, anyway, said that the Google Jobs system on the Johnson & Johnson careers site enables candidates to find open positions across the company in a much more intuitive and relevant way. Based on completely different search technology and a different taxonomy, this Google interface for jobs is able to serve up more relevant jobs which the candidate might have missed out on otherwise. Ultimately, this partnership brings more relevant jobs to candidates, creating more economic opportunity. Google is working with many organizations, including LinkedIn, Career Builder, Monster, that's a big job board site, and yes, Facebook. Goodness sakes, how could Facebook not be part of something innovative and new on the internet? Anyway, Google's working with those companies and more to bring users the most comprehensive job listings possible. That's according to Nick Zakrzek, a product manager at Google. Google is publishing open documentation for all job providers, including third-party platforms and direct employers, whether large or small, so that their job openings are more discoverable. Michael Jude, a research manager at Straightcast Frost & Sullivan, there's a smart guy we quote a lot because he knows a lot, put it mildly. Anyway, he said the Google technology competes directly with Indeed, which also aggregates job searches across multiple sites. However, according to Paul Darcy, senior VP at Indeed, our experience shows clearly that search is useful only if it has all the jobs. For this reason, Indeed focuses on comprehensiveness, working relentlessly to get every job on Indeed, including jobs from 3 million employers that post directly to Indeed. Most of these jobs are not available on any other job site. Job search is one of the most important searches in a person's life. We've always assumed that the largest companies in the world would want to enter the job space. Indeed's strategy remains the same. And again, this comes from Paul Darcy, their senior VP at Indeed, a big job search site. He said, "We continue to focus on relentlessly innovating to help people get jobs. This is our sole mission, and we have nearly 5,000 employees dedicated to building the technologies and services that provide job seekers the best chance to get hired." Google had no information to share regarding how to service companies. Google had no information to share regarding how its service compares to Indeed, according to spokesperson Susan Kudryka. However, she said, "To ensure even more jobs are listed over time, we're publishing open documentation for all jobs providers from third-party platforms or direct employers, big or small, detailing how to make their job openings discoverable in this new feature." Now, Facebook, of course, they're always in the mix, right? They recently launched their own job search capability, as you probably know. They certainly talk about it on the app and when you go to Facebook.com. Now, this Facebook job search system is not likely to have much of an impact, according to our expert Mike Jude from Straightcast Frost and Sullivan, due to the stigma that many employers associate with using social media sites for job searching. But Facebook's partnership with Google may have brighter prospects. Gaurav Dosi, product manager at Facebook, said, "We've launched the ability to apply to jobs on Facebook to make it faster and easier to find the right job. We've been thrilled to hear from people and business owners alike that Facebook has helped take the work out of their searches. We think this partnership with Google will make everyone's search that much easier." Zach Fuller, an analyst at Midia Research, said, "The new job search technology will serve two purposes. It'll function as a driver of additional revenue by making Google act as a recruiter for talent, while diversifying the stream from AdWords-based advertising. It'll also serve as a testing ground for Google's artificial intelligence capabilities. By implementing artificial intelligence into the process, I perceive it as a way for Google to familiarize users with what will be a core technology for the company." And according to Zach Fuller from Midia Research, Jim McGregor from Tyrios Research, another expert we quote often, said, "You have to wonder what took Google so long to do this. Google is definitely behind the curve on searching for jobs, but with the largest search engine in the world, it makes perfect sense that using Google would be more natural for people because we, quote, Google for everything. It's possible Google may have another motive, something else up their sleeve, gathering additional information to find talent for Google, to find Google employees. With this high competition for critical high-tech talent, this may give Google a leg up on the job pool." So Google's job search, good for finding jobs, but even a job at Google. Interesting, huh? Well, let me know what you think. Job searching, doing it online, or even maybe working for Google. Send me an email. Would love to hear from you. Adam at WWGH1071.com. It's the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, and I hit your airwaves with technology talk, getting geeky, Tuesday and Thursday between approximately 9:13 a.m. and 10 a.m. on The Talking Place, the place for talk. Join the conversation. All those catchphrases are applicable. WWGH Radio. So we've talked about the up-and-coming new iPhone in previous shows and got some updates for you. First of all, get out the greenbacks. Get out your checkbook and work some overtime, or maybe get lucky at the casino or at the Ohio Lottery or whatever your gambling choice may be. Because the next iPhone is rumored to cost $1,000. That's a lot of money. I have to work a long time at the radio station to make that much. So if you're a person of better means than myself, this might be of interest. The iPhone X is one of a few possible names for the new iPhone. It is expected to come with bells and whistles, to put it mildly, an edge-to-edge screen, face recognition, and a 3D camera. Steve Wozniak, Apple's co-founder, said Apple has cultivated a class of buyers who pay more and expect to pay more for a type of brand prestige. Even techies want to show off that they have the very latest iPhone. The iPhone X may be the first iPhone in 3 years to look substantially different from the iPhone 6. According to CNN, although some people may want the latest and greatest, Apple fans are not always willing to shell out so much for a new iPhone. $1,000, I mean, come on. Even someone like myself would flinch at such an expense. Now, about 10 years ago, consumers were rather shocked when the company said the first iPhone would cost $599. Now, Apple eventually cut that to $399. Again, that's in $2007, so still a very fair chunk of change. They offered credits to people who already bought one at the higher price. The average selling price of an iPhone is currently $605. If you buy the 256-gigabyte iPhone 7 Plus, that's $969. So people may be willing to pay $1,000. I mean, not me, but if you are, that's fine. I'm sure Apple will gladly take your greenbacks. Now, Apple and the other players in the smartphone industry have done a very good job removing the sticker shock by moving to a monthly payment plan. You know, you don't see it, you don't miss it. The average iPhone sold in the first quarter of 2017 was only $25 a month over 2 years. Now, if the iPhone X is $1,000, that's $42 a month over 2 years, and that's not too bad, but it adds up. 42 times 24, well, that's about $1,000. Apple analyst Gene Munster, who's now with Laup Ventures, feels that 30 to 40% of Apple's customers would be willing to pay the $1,000 or more to buy the new iPhone. According to ComScore, people spend more than 4 hours a day on their phones, and I believe that. I probably spend that much. A lot of it's business-related, but like most people, I probably spend too much time on Facebook and reading the latest in celebrity gossip and news and all that good stuff. So obviously, when you spend a sixth of your day, 4 hours a day or more, that's a lot of time. You spend that much time on your smartphone, $1,000 ain't too bad. Gene Munster, again, he's an analyst for Apple, said your greatest return on investment for any piece of technology is your phone. People have become more comfortable spending lots of money on their phones. Now, counterpoint to this $1,000 iPhone. There are really great phones on the market, according to the experts, for under $400. Xiaomi, OnePlus, and Motorola have been in the running and have offered competitively priced smartphones that have great quality at a price that won't break the bank. Now, Apple has the iPhone SE for $399, and the iPhone 6S could be as little as $449. Horace Dedayu, an Apple analyst with a Simco, expert in this kind of thing, feels offering a super-end, super-duper, fancy-dancy, souped-up iPhone is the right move for Apple because it follows a classic retail strategy. Now, consumer goods makers typically offer a low-end, a mid-range, and a high-end product line. And customers typically find themselves buying in the middle Apple has offered a less expensive and mid-range iPhone, but it has not yet come out with a bells-and-whistles super-duper, fancy-dancy, and expensive iPhone for the power users and users with a nice big stash of money in their wallet. He said without an aspirational product, it assumes there's no value in a phone beyond its utility. But some people want to buy expensive things to feel good about themselves because they want to give expensive gifts or feel powerful or influential. Now again, Steve Wozniak, he goes by Woz, and co-founder of Apple, said, I'm sure that I'll want at least one of the new iPhones, but maybe not five of them, like in the past. Well, with all the money he has, he could buy $1,000 iPhones, and that's still just pocket change. So, what do you think? Is the new iPhone worth $1,000? I don't think so, but perhaps if you're a diehard power user and you want all the bells and whistles, it might be. Adam Lepp here, the computer guy, with my twice weekly radio show here on The Talking Place, WWGH. After Hurricane Harvey left parts of Texas damaged and flooded, Verizon sent help. They sent help to Port Arthur, Texas, and what they provided was a big white truck. It is a mobile communications center lined with semi-private desks and topped with a pair of satellite dishes. Each desk has a port to connect to the internet, a plug to charge a cell phone or a tablet or other devices, and a telephone. Verizon says more than 100 people, including evacuees from shelters and emergency personnel, have been using the truck daily. It's one of the ways cellular companies try to get customers service after a storm or hurricane disrupts service. When a natural disaster hits, the ability to make a phone call can be critical. After a storm, people need their phones to call 911 as well as check available evacuation routes, get news, and tell friends and family they're safe. Now, we wonder, are cell phones hurricane hardy? Well, they are built to withstand strong hurricane winds, but Harvey had 130 mile per hour gusts, and that was a bit too much for some of the towers to handle. According to the FCC, 320 out of 7,800 cell sites were down in affected areas in Texas. That's almost 5%, so a pretty significant amount. In some areas, like Aransas County, almost every tower was out of commission following Harvey. Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile use a combination of specially trained repair crews, as well as generators, drones, mobile communication centers like Verizon's white truck, and cellular sites on wheels, which they call COWs. You know, it's cellular on wheels. That's kind of cool. Now, every cellular carrier has emergency plans in place for before, during, and after an emergency, like a hurricane. The first step is, of course, getting service up and working as quickly as possible. They already have experience deploying hardware to beef up networks for non-emergencies like sporting events or presidential inauguration when everybody's on his or her phone. I've had friends talk about poor cellular service during the recent Ohio State football game. Well, when you have over 100,000 people in a stadium, everybody's on the phone taking selfies and texting about the score or watching their favorite sports or news channel while they're watching the game, that can certainly be draining on the cell towers, to put it mildly. To assess damage, some carriers use drones to quickly get information from areas that might have been inaccessible by car due to flooding. AT&T deployed more than 40 drones in the skies above southern Texas following Harvey and had 58 more on standby. The drones captured high-resolution footage of cell sites so engineers could see what needed repairing in real time. Then companies send out repair crews and engineers to fix cell sites as quickly as possible, often before the bad weather has fully cleared up. Towers typically have backup power, but even if undamaged by the storm, they may need a generator to continue operation. So, cellular carriers doing quite a bit to make service reliable before, during, and after a storm. And as you can imagine, that's quite important. And I think they're doing a pretty good job, and it's expensive for them also. But hats off to AT&T, T-Mobile, and Verizon, and other providers of cell service. Adam Lepp here, the computer guy, with my twice-weekly radio show on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio.
If I knew you were coming, I'd bake the cake.
Adam Lepp!
Yes, that's my name, and talking technology topics on Tuesday and Thursday. That's my game. Thank you for listening. Show is going to conclude shortly, but don't despair. I'm back next hour for mid-morning coffee break. Dr. Ronald Fineman will be joining me from his domicile in southeastern Florida, discussing the hurricane, which he witnessed personally. Some memories of 9/11, hard to believe 16 years and one day ago. And we'll be discussing current events and the President Donald, as I call him. And, of course, a surprise or two. Any show of Adam will have a surprise. I can assure you of that. But surprises are good. Learn something. We like to tickle the brain a little bit and invite your feedback. What do you think about the show? This show, Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam. And occasionally, I also substitute for Scott Spears on the Now program. Love to hear from you. Adam at WWGH1071.com. Hope you're having a great Tuesday. Be back on the flip side about 14 minutes or so with mid-morning coffee break. Stay tuned.
See you later, alligator. She told me, nearly made me lose my head. When I thought of what she told me, nearly made me lose my head. But the next time that I saw her, reminded her of what she said. See you later, alligator. I know you mean it just for play. I said, wait a minute, gator. I know you mean it just for play. Don't you know you really hurt me? And this is what I have to say.